Hello again, everybody. I'm Alan Lytle, along with Greg Hardison and Stuart Sanders from the Kentucky Historical Society. Welcome into another edition of 120 Common Threads of Kentucky History. Guys, welcome in today.
Hey, how are you, Alan?
Hey, Alan.
Good to hear from you all. It's been a while, and we kind of took part of the winter. Actually, we took all the winter off, but we are back now in the spring with some great topics. And today, no exception, we're talking about Kentucky's role in the Civil War.
An incredible story, of course, shaped how Kentucky is today. So we have a lot of great information to share.
A matter of fact, we're going to hear from a UK history professor who recently won the prestigious Frederick Douglass Book Prize for her 2019 book, Embattled Freedom, Journeys Through the Civil War's Slave Refugee Camps. That'll be an interesting topic that you don't hear too much about, and some other topics still to come on 120.
Yeah, and that book is, rightfully so, won some wonderful awards and, you know, has some good Kentucky connections, deals a lot with Camp Nelson and Jessamine County. So excited to hear that interview.
One of the cool things I love about the Civil War in Kentucky is because Kentucky's a border state, because we are kind of right in the middle, literally, we're sort of a microcosm of all of these things that are happening in the United States that are. And so we're able to kind of look at the Civil War through a lens of Kentuckians and their experiences and get all of these different diverse sort of experiences. So today, throughout the podcast, I'm going to share some little audio clips that are basically excerpts of primary sources that represent these different diverse Kentucky voices throughout the Civil War and some of the experiences that they have and some of the emotional feelings that they have.
And Greg, aren't a few of those taken from the archives of the Kentucky Historical Society too?
Actually, many of them are from the archives of the Kentucky Historical Society. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and speaking of KHS, I had the great opportunity to talk to one of our colleagues at the Kentucky Historical Society, Dr. Chuck Welsko. And Chuck heads up our Civil War Governors of Kentucky digital documentary edition. And this is an incredible online archive that's comprised of, you know, over 10,000 documents from the Civil War era that deal with Kentucky's five Civil War governors, three Union governors, and two Confederate provisional governors, and really seeks to sort of expand the story and our knowledge about the Civil War in Kentucky.
And, you know, to tie in with our overall theme of our podcast, Common Threads of Kentucky History, one of the coolest things that I love about the Civil War Governors Project is that they've, through that project, it's not just about the governors themselves, but it's about all of the conversations and the communication that they had. And they're able to show these connections between the people that wrote them and the people that they wrote back to. And so you've got all of these really interesting threads. And if you go to their website, you can see a visualization of the threads and how different people that they've transcribed the documents of are directly connected through the documents that are on the website. So it's a great visualization of these connections and the diverse peoples.
Yeah, they found an incredible number of social connections between the people who were writing to the governors. And the themes are pretty incredible too. It's everything from, you know, economic issues to enslavement and emancipation. And even if you like true crime, there's sort of a lot of stories about murder and mayhem in there as well. You know, people writing the governor for pardons or for sentence remittances. And they've done a really wonderful job of interpreting sort of a deeper side of the Civil War to the general public. And so whether you're interested in sort of community history, you can do a search based on your own county or town. If you're doing family history research, you can, you know, throw in a last name and you may find a relative you didn't know existed. So it's a great resource for not only Kentuckians, but nationwide as we seek to get a deeper understanding of America's greatest conflict.
All right. So all of that and more is on today's program. What do you say we get started? Well, the Civil War was just days old when the first enslaved men, women, and children began fleeing their plantations to seek refuge inside the lines of the Union Army as it moved deep into the heart of the Confederacy. In the years that followed, hundreds of thousands more would make a mass exodus from slavery to freedom. Dr. Amy Morrell Taylor, an associate professor in the UK History Department, has written a powerful book about this period in our history, Embattled Freedom, Journeys Through the Civil War's Slave Refugee Camps, draws on an extraordinary survey of these makeshift camps throughout the country, including at Camp Nelson right here in central Kentucky. revealing as never before the everyday experiences of these refugees. In fact, Embattled Freedom recently won the prestigious Frederick Douglass Book Prize for 2019. So here's my conversation with Dr. Taylor.
One of the things that I think you make a very strong point is the Emancipation Proclamation was anything but cut and dried.
Right.
Talk about that.
So I think most of us grew up going to school, learning that the story of emancipation is the story of January 1st, 1863, when Lincoln issues his monumental proclamation. And we then are left to assume that enslaved people overnight received their freedom. And this was the triumphant culmination of all of this push for freedom. Well, sometime in my historical studies, I began to uncover hints that, in fact, the story was far more complicated than that, that nobody was just given freedom. Nobody just achieved freedom overnight. But in fact, enslaved people themselves not only had been pushing for freedom their entire time in slavery, and there's so much evidence of resistance during slavery, but from the very first days of the American Civil War, enslaved people started running away and did so in a way that put pressure on the Union and pressure on Lincoln. And you could argue, and I do, that the Emancipation Proclamation in many ways reacted to what enslaved people were doing themselves to become free.
In reading this, they didn't really have a plan for all of the refugees. I'm talking about
right.
The Union and the military didn't have a plan for
Not
this.
At all. They didn't see this coming. In previous wars, in the Revolution, in the War of 1812, enslaved people fled. And they should have seen this coming, but they didn't. And so in the very first months of the war, we have Union commanders in places like Fort Monroe, Virginia, who are starting to see hundreds and eventually thousands of people coming into their lines. And the Union pretty early says, OK, they can stay. But that then raises all these sorts of questions about, well, how are they going to stay here? Where are they going to live? Shelter, food, clothing, labor? How is all of this going to work? And some of these military officers who signed up to fight a war to defend the Union now found themselves overseeing a refugee crisis and overseeing this process of emancipation. And it was more than some of them wanted to take on.
Let's talk about Camp Nelson in general, too, mm-hmm. because people can just get in the car, drive out there a short distance and see some of this. But talk about its importance in not necessarily the narrative, but in just in history in general, because I think they want to make it a national monument.
It is a national monument. So that is, I have to say, I was thrilled when I heard that, because here in central Kentucky, we are in proximity of one of the most important sites of this whole process of emancipation during the Civil War. Camp Nelson it originated as a Union supply depot. Then it became a central recruiting station for black soldiers, one of the most important ones, recruited one of the largest numbers across the South. But it also was a place eventually where women and children were taking up residence in this refugee camp. And there's a long, complex story of what happens at Camp Nelson. But suffice it to say, some things happened there that changed Union policy across the board and helped make sure that wives and children of soldiers would be viewed as free by the Union, because that had not been the case across the board. There were in many places, men would enlist and the Union would turn their wives and children away. Camp Nelson helped change that. So there is a very important story at Camp Nelson, a very difficult story as well. There was a lot of suffering there as well, as there were in many camps. But I'm thrilled we have it so nearby. I love to take my students there, and so they can see and try to imagine what this history was like. And thrilled that now the National Park Service will help protect it for the long term.
And when we talk about Camp Nelson and just these camps in general, very important that we get the full story. And that's what that's what Embattled Freedom was really attempting to tell.
Yeah, the full story. I mean, I didn't want to just look at these camps from a distance. I didn't want to look at them as just supplemental to what Lincoln was doing in Washington, but really get, as we say, as historians like to say, on the ground. And because I do think that the everydayness of simply trying to find a shelter, of trying to feed oneself and one family, of trying to secure clothing, these basic essentials of survival are, you know, they were primary in the minds of those fleeing slavery. This was kind of the central, most important thing that they were thinking about. And I think we need to reclaim that and understand that freedom was not all just something granted overnight in Washington, but something that required this everyday fight for the most basic essentials of living in order to realize liberation.
Wow, Alan, that was a great interview with Dr. Taylor. And, you know, we're really lucky to have her in Kentucky at UK. I think she's going to really broaden our understanding of the Civil War. And, you know, that includes sites like Camp Nelson, which is, you know, an incredibly preserved Civil War site in Jessamine County, just south of Lexington, near Nicholasville. And, you know, it's now been recognized as a site of national significance. It's now under the National Park Service. It was declared a national monument. And so I think in the next couple of years, we're just going to see a lot more on the national importance of that incredible site. I'm really excited that Dr. Taylor has dug into the research there. And, you know, I really encourage any listener who has a passing interest in history to go tour Camp Nelson. They've got a great museum and incredible grounds that you can hike. So it's a wonderful, not only a wonderful historical resource in Central Kentucky, but it's a great, you know, resource for educational programs and also, you know, getting outdoor recreation too.
Yeah, understanding the experience of the enslaved people and their families is really important to sort of understanding that, again, that microcosm of Kentucky and the complexities of the people that were here. I'd like to share the perspective of a Kentucky enslaved man named Isaac Johnson, who during the Civil War joined the Union Army.
1901, I enlisted in Company A, 102nd United States Colored Troops, and I remained with them till the war was over. After the close of the war, I had a strong desire to return to the old Kentucky home to see my old master and learn what I could of my own people. I think I also had a desire to see master in the broken condition I imagined the war must have left him. I started and reached the old stock farm at last, where I had seen so much misery. I went to the house and found master was in bed, paralyzed. I said to myself, the Lord has answered my prayer and allowed me to live to see him punished, who so cruelly tortured and murdered my friend Bob. Isaac Johnson.
Wow, Greg, that's an incredible thing to share. I appreciate that. It's amazing to have that story of an enslaved Kentuckian who escaped slavery, enlists in the Union Army, and then, you know, returns after the war to see his former enslaver in that condition. I appreciate you sharing that, and it's an incredible perspective to have. And I think, you know, with the Civil War Governors of Kentucky Digital Documentary Edition, we also have other perspectives that we can share. And, you know, I'm happy to share this interview that I did with Dr. Chuck Welsko from the Kentucky Historical Society, talking about this important digital project.
I'm speaking with Dr. Chuck Welsko, who runs the Civil War Governors of Kentucky Digital Documentary Edition for the Kentucky Historical Society. And Chuck earned his PhD at West Virginia University, and he specializes in 19th century Civil War cultural and social history. He's also an expert in Civil War border state history as well. And Chuck, thanks so much for being here today.
Hi, Stuart. Thanks for having me. It's a really great pleasure to be here.
First and foremost, can you tell us a little bit about the Civil War Governors of Kentucky Digital Documentary Edition?
Absolutely. CWGK, as we like to circumnavigate the larger title, is a collection of over 10,000 documents written from five governors of Kentucky during the Civil War era, or documents sent to those individuals. In the spirit of other documentary editions, whether they're paper or digital, like the Lincoln Papers or the Thomas Jefferson Papers, we look at these important individuals, but we flip the script. We use these papers, these 10,000 documents, to assess the lives of ordinary individuals. How did enslaved and free Kentuckians, white or African American, experience the throes and the chaos of the Civil War? So we use this project to unpack a state in the middle of chaos and uncertainty between 1860 and 1865.
So why do you use the governor's paper specifically to understand the Civil War in Kentucky?
So the governor's papers are good because they sat, the individual governors, there's three Union governors and two Confederate governors, and they sit at the intersection of everyday life for Kentuckians. They sit at the issues of larger national context in the middle of the Civil War, emancipation, the organization of militaries, guerrilla conflict, right? The large questions of what is happening to the nation, but also the daily concerns of ordinary people, right? Things that what we would consider mundane aspects of ordinary everyday life, but at the same time, what is really affecting them nationally? And so how are they looking to the state executive to navigate the intersection of these difficulties?
So you're looking at the 1860s, but how does this project really help inform modern issues?
I think if we look at what is happening today in the United States, right, the legacies of the Civil War are in many ways unresolved. The military conflict ends in 1865, but as scholars turn their attention more to Reconstruction, Jim Crow America, and the events that come afterwards, the foundations of those events, the things that are still affecting Americans today, white and especially the African American communities, take their roots in what happens between Lincoln's election and the collapse of the last slaveholding state or the last slaveholding institution in the United States, that being Kentucky, right? Slavery remains in the Commonwealth until December of 1865. And so in many ways, the discussions that we're seeing today, the persistence of Confederate memory, the contested legacies of the Civil War, and questions of civil rights for African Americans continue to pop up. And we see the foundations of that in Kentucky on a microcosm, but the nation writ large in the middle of the Civil War era.
Chuck, what have been some of your favorite stories to emerge from this archive?
Oh man, there's so many good ones. But yeah, in brief, right, one of the things I'm working right now is on a murder case that I talked about on one of KHS's virtual presentations. So if you hop over to the Kentucky Historical Society's page where we have our virtual talks, I have a discussion about a murder case that involves a number of different individuals in Caldwell County. That's kind of my favorite right now, but not to talk only about that one. The thing that probably drove my colleagues insane was the case of John Brookover. He is actually from Ohio, but in 1856, he's convicted of grand larceny in Mason County, Kentucky. He escapes from jail and then kind of runs away for 8 years, or at least that's how his petition makes it sound. He runs away, he abandons his family, he essentially absconds westward and eventually enlists in the Kansas Cavalry Regiment, fights in the Civil War, and then him and his family kind of concoct this fraud that allows him to get pardoned and come back to Ohio to be with his wife, who he claims divorces him and is dying, but later records kind of show that that might not be the case. There's also Beriah McGoffin's attempts to smuggle guns to secessionists in Louisville early in 1860-1861, but he does it through a heavily inebriated individual down in New Orleans, and it's just a continuous rolling debacle.
Now, Chuck, what is the future of studying the Civil War, and how can Kentucky serve as that laboratory?
No, that's a great question, Stuart. So we always refer in some of our grant applications and how we envision CWGK as using Kentucky and the documentary edition as a laboratory, as a space where people can study radical social history, looking at how ordinary individuals explored or experienced the Civil War. We see this in a number of ways, right, kind of tying back to what I was talking about earlier, in both the unique and familiar aspects of the Civil War in Kentucky, in that there's these really local events and we can connect them to these familiar national stories that complicate and allow us deeper insights into how ordinary people navigated the throes of civil strife.
I've been speaking with Dr. Chuck Welsko, who runs the Civil War Governors of Kentucky Digital Documentary Edition for the Kentucky Historical Society. And Chuck, thanks so much for being here with me.
Thank you, Stuart, so much for having me. It was great to talk about CWGK and the project we have at the Kentucky Historical Society. If you want to check out CWGK, visit discovery.civilwargovernors.org.
During the Civil War, Governor Thomas E. Bramlett disagreed with President Abraham Lincoln over many major issues. After Lincoln's assassination, the governor finally recognized the enduring legacy of Lincoln's policies. At a mass meeting in Louisville on April 18, 1865, Bramlett admitted,
"We may differ with him and have differed with him, but when the judgment of future events has come, we found we were differing blindly. That he was right and we were wrong. Standing as we did in local positions, surrounded as we were by local prejudices, he occupied an elevated standpoint and viewed the whole political surroundings of the country. His course has been marked by the honest purposes of preserving the institutions of our country, to preserve all that is worth preserving and that could possibly be preserved from the wreck of this revolution. We cannot deny, fellow citizens, that a revolution has swept over our country. Experience and time has demonstrated that his was the only line of salvation for our country." Governor Thomas E. Bramlett.
Well, while we're discussing resources at the Kentucky Historical Society, you know, we also have an incredible resource in the Old State Capitol, which the Kentucky Historical Society manages and which is available for tours. And Greg, that had a important Civil War history in its own right.
It did. Kentucky shares a unique situation in that during the Civil War, we had a provisional government that was established early in the war. And it was essentially a shadow Confederate government of sorts. And they actually had two governors. In September of 1862, the Confederates attacked Frankfort and captured the Capitol building. And the Confederate governor of Kentucky actually started giving a speech in celebration of taking back the state. However, what's fascinating is right in the middle of his speech, the Union started attacking. And as soon as his speech was over, they left Frankfort and Frankfort was taken back by the Union troops. And this is just before on their way to Perryville. So it's kind of, you know, right in the middle of this, of the Civil War, and really kind of a climactic moment of the Civil War for Kentucky, with some of the biggest battles that are happening in our state at the time.
Fellow citizens of the state of Kentucky, I claim the privilege and feel it is a duty to address you. On the 18th of November, 1861, a convention representing 68 counties adopted an ordinance forever severing our connection with the government of the United States and declaring Kentucky to be a free and independent state, clothed with all power to fix her own destiny and to secure her own rights and liberties. That convention appointed commissioners to negotiate and treat with the Confederate States of America for admission as a sister state, and was admitted and received on an equal footing with the other states of the Confederacy. The government thus created proceeded to exercise its lawful functions until it was driven from the state by the armies of the United States. The provisional government, driven from the state by the overpowering forces of federal arms, has returned under the protection of the Confederate Army, and I propose to enter my duties as Chief Magistrate of Kentucky.
See, I think that's amazing, and I don't know that other states have that in their history. Right. Simultaneously, you had, you know, competing governments right there in Frankfort, you know.
Yeah. Only Union state to be taken captive, you know, for a short while.
Yeah. And throughout the war, troops from both sides traveled and caused chaos throughout the state, with citizens showing support for both sides. You know, it's been said that Kentucky embodied the theme of brother versus brother, but, you know, there are so many other perspectives to consider. Annie McCarroll Starling was a Western Kentucky teenager from Hopkinsville. In her diary, Annie recounts local war news on numerous instances and describes the comings and goings of various armies throughout the southern Kentucky.
Sunday came the news that the rebels under General Lyon were coming, upon which the gentlemen all left town fearing that they would be conscripted. They did not arrive, however, until 2 days later. I believe they are 1,500 strong. They took our mule, which of course left us in a bad fix. They also took 2 horses from Mr. Starling, sacked every shop and grocery in town, and conscripted every man of the right age who they could lie their hands on. Moreover, they put the torch, too, and burned our poor venerated old courthouse and the old shell of the male seminary. They were committing all kinds of fiendishness, and we did not know when they would leave. But then, hooray for the stars and stripes. Thank heaven we were finally delivered from Lyon's thieving scoundrels. Yesterday morning came the roar and heavy report of cannons mingled with the volleys of musketry. We had just gotten up and were not entirely dressed when we heard those sounds and saw our soldiers filing rapidly down the Greenville Road with their dear old flag floating. I could no longer keep back the tears, but fell gratefully on my knees and with a murmured prayer of thanksgiving to God. We did not go to church this morning on account of our church being used as a hospital for 6 soldiers, but there was preaching today at the camp. We could hear a good many things that the preacher said. Mr. Nevius will next Sunday night of the following commence a series of lectures on the millennium. Everyone almost seems under excitement about the end of the world. A good many books have been written on the subject lately. May God grant that I be prepared when the time comes.
Well, gentlemen, if this podcast proves anything, that the scholarship just continues as far as our understanding of the Civil War, especially in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, the scholarship is great, and the number of resources that are available to researchers and the public just grows and grows every year. And, you know, I know Greg and I are excited to be part of an institution that's making things more available to the public.
And I think one of the most important things is we start shining more light on the voices and perspectives of people that are not expected, and especially African-American experience during the Civil War, what their lives were like. Those resources are a little bit harder to find, but it's important that we find them and shine light on them.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, Dr. Taylor's new book is so important, because it does focus on those refugees and it focuses on Camp Nelson, which I would argue is one of the most important Civil War sites, you know, not only in Kentucky, but in the nation. And again, that's why it's now part of the National Park Service.
And obviously, this is grist for the mill, but I can see us talking at a later date about how our perceptions of the Civil War in Kentucky have changed. I mean, the old saw is basically Kentucky was the only state to join the Confederacy after the war ended. And there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, there is. I mean, that's one thing that makes Kentucky so interesting. Not only do you have, you know, this fratricidal war where, you know, it was sort of family against family, neighbor against neighbor, but then you also have after the war this perspective shifting from being pro-Union to sort of having this Confederate memory just inundating the state. And that's one reason we have all these Confederate monuments in Kentucky today.
In a lot of ways, guys, we're fighting some of those same battles here in the United States.
Well, that will wrap it up for today's edition of 120 Common Threads of Kentucky History. Thanks again to Stuart Sanders and also to Greg Hardison of the Kentucky Historical Society. We've got some people to thank.
Special thanks to our guests, University of Kentucky history professor and author, Dr. Amy Morrell Taylor, and Dr. Chuck Welsko with the Civil War Governors of Kentucky Digital Documentary Edition. With voiceover talents from Robert Green, Walter Tunis, Leah Rome, and Adam Lucky. This program was presented by the Kentucky Historical Society in partnership with WUKY, a community-sponsored service of the University of Kentucky.